You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. This is number
Seven.
743, I think. 743, I think. This is features editor John Gentile. We just put up a whole bunch of episodes just yesterday or today or something. And then we got a few more in the chamber. And I'm here with M. Moore. M. Moore, what's going on? Co-head editor M. Moore. M. Moore, what's going on? What's happening? What's snapping? What's cracking?
Hey. Yeah. What is going on? I am just getting over a bit of a nose thing. So if I sound weird, that's what's happening. I
Were
was
you in
like,
rehab? Are you saying you were in rehab last week? Is that why you were gone for a week? A
yeah,
nose thing?
that's where I went. I had a nose issue. No, it was I was in a couple different cities, so I was like traveling a bit, and it was just like you're in like freezing cold, and then you're in like hot, and then it just kind of you keep going, and it just fucked up my sinuses a little bit. So hopefully I'll sleep really well tonight and it'll be over, because I am so tired of this.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about M. Moore's vacation tonight. Also tonight, we're
Hey.
going to cover a fair amount. We might get to all of you, the new Hellcat band, Black Flag singers issues, Keefy D,
Oh yeah.
convicted of the murder of Tupac, Crass's new foundation, Andrew WK, and probably Bonnaroo. But also next week, very special guest. M, should we tell him who it is, or should we leave him hanging?
I think we should leave them hanging. I
Leave him
think they're going to
hanging.
be very surprised.
So
I'm
the
excited.
We'll give him a hint. This guest is a musician and is known for being a musician, but in the punk news world, this guest isn't only known for being a musician. So we'll see. Very excited about this episode. This episode too. Well, this episode I'm all
Yes.
right on. Next episode is
Thanks.
going to be awesome. So listen, we're going to rap a little bit, then we're going to hit the news. I saw
Yes.
a very M War band. I saw Rush, and for once.
Hey.
For once, I sort of, kind of, maybe, sort of, maybe, if-ish, got StubHub to work on my side. I got a,
Hey.
those Rush tickets and were
Yes.
insanely expensive. The
Oh my
crappy
God.
tickets were like $250, and the good ones were like, I mean, not the good, the good ones were like 500, and like the best ones were like 5,000, which frankly is ridiculous, ridiculous. So anyway, M, it was the week of my birthday. I was like, I'm gonna treat yourself, So I went on StubHub, and I saw. A ticket that was really only 10 rows back, or maybe like 12 rows back, or no, 11 rows back, I think, maybe 13 rows back, around there from the stage, but on the side. And sometimes if there's jumbo shows, when you get the side, sometimes you're even like behind the stage, and it kind of sucks. You really can't see,
Oh, yeah.
So I saw a ticket for about $200, which, if it was in the front of the stage, M, would have been about $2,000 to $5,000. But because it was the side, I said, you know what? I'm going to risk it, man. I'm going to risk it. It's my birthday coming up. I'm going to go see Rush. And I risked it, M, and I went. And M, you wouldn't believe it, is I was on the side of the stage, but like it wasn't obscure. I was not even on, like, almost not a 45 degree angle, but like maybe a 30 degree angle from the stage. So I could see everything. And I saw more of Geddy Lee than I did of Alec Lifeson, or have it. All the guys, they all pronounce it really weird. Is it Alec Leeson, Alec Lifeson, whatever, the guitar player? And
Yeah,
so, but like
I've
they
heard of
moved
both
around the
names.
stage. So I mean, it was really, really cool. And then I essentially got like a $2,000 ticket for $200. As to Rush themselves, and I think both you and I agreed that it probably shouldn't be called Rush. I say it should be called like Rushed or something like that,
Yeah.
because the drummer is not Canadian, which annoyed me. And there's a fourth person, a keyboard player. And so I said, well, I'll just go. I mean, I wouldn't spend $500, but 200, to see Rush. I do love Rush. I went. There was about M. It was one of the few. It was at, I think it was at the Xfinity Center, which is the ice hockey arena in Philadelphia, and basketball. And it was one of the few concerts at a Jumbo Arena where the women's bathroom line was much shorter than the men's bathroom line. Much, 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 much shorter. If you were a woman and you go to the bathroom, you had like no wait time whatsoever.
Hell yeah.
Which talks about, Rush's demographic. And so anyways, so I was actually, I had a little bit of trepidation regarding Rush, but actually leading up, because I got such a good deal, I was feeling real good. I'm like, this is gonna be cool. I'm gonna go see Rush. Plus, I got free parking. which I always psyched on, instead of spending like $50 at the friggin' arena, which is insane. And so I went, and they come out, and I think they open. Actually, let me pull up the set list real quick. I'm not gonna draw this out too
Yeah.
much. It had like an intro that had like kind of like a Scooby-Doo mystery. The intro was probably like almost 10 minutes long. It was almost like a mini TV show, which was kind of amusing. I thought it was a little long, honestly. But it, you know, Rush is always, you know, very big on, I don't know, Rush-ish style humor. So check this out, Em. Guess what song
Yes.
they opened with? This was cool. This blew my mind, actually.
Tom Sawyer.
Xanadu. I'm like, ah,
Oh,
you know, not,
okay.
I mean, not a super deep cut, but
Okay.
not like on their first 10 greatest hits tracks. You know what I mean? I love Xanadu
Yeah.
is among their most proggiest stuff. They opened with Xanadu, they went to Spirit of the Radio, and they did analog. They did mostly for, so they're basically alternating sets. So for the cities that are doing two nights in a row, they're alternating sets. So I'll just run through the set list. Xanadu, Spirit of the Radio, Analog Kid, Free Will, Subdivision, which was cool, Bravado, Caravan, La Villa Strangiato, which was awesome, The Trees,
Oh.
which was awesome, Limelight, which was awesome, then M, all of 2112, then Anime, Closer to the Heart, then Apaches to Bangkok, then most of Moving Pictures, Out of Order, Time Stand Still, but YYZ, Anthem, Red Barchetta, The Garden, Tom Sawyer, and they closed with Finding My Way and Working Man, you know, off the very first record. They sounded awesome, and they really, Geddy Lee sounded awesome. The playing was awesome. I was mad that there was, not mad, but I was annoyed that there was three people. I was mad that the drummer wasn't Canadian. And halfway through Xanadu, I didn't care anymore. They were awesome, and I don't care. I mean, it you know, I was like, it should be not Rush because there's no Neil Peart, but
Right.
you know what I mean? You know, Neil Peart has passed away, very sad. But I didn't care that it's called Rush. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. I was blown away that we got. I actually kind of wish I went the second night because they did all of Moving Pictures and kind of almost a totally different set list. Not totally different, but significantly different. They sounded amazing. The song choices were amazing. The crowd was blown away. They did really like three or four tributes to Neil Peart, which I wonder, is that almost too much, Em? Like they did like three or four tributes, which in a way they have to. They can't, like, you know, they have to do at least one or maybe two, you know. They did like four, which I get, you know, it's Rush. He's a big part of the band. A huge part of the band. I think he was the main lyricist, I think, wasn't he, Neil Peart?
Yeah, he
They also, at the
was.
very end, actually, I thought it was kind of cool. When they did the two songs off the first album, Working Man and Finding My Way, they also did a little bit of a tribute to John Rutsey, the original Rush drummer that passed away not that long ago as well, which I thought that was kind of a nice thing to do, you know. Very Canadian, very diplomatic, you know, very, very. And so anyway, and Rush was awesome. Everyone, oh, so every Rush was awesome. I mean, really, I'm so glad I went. I've seen Rush three times now. I saw him back in the day twice, which was cool, but when I saw them back in the day twice, they did a lot of their 90s songs, even though it was like 2000, and that was a challenge. And this time it was pretty much straight up 70s and 80s, and like a couple, like if they did just 70s and 80s, that might have been lame, but they did mostly 70s and 80s and a few newer things, and it was awesome. Like, I was blown away. Like, it was su I would go tomorrow if I could again. Super super duper good. So on in you know
Oh,
once in a,
good.
I usually avoid audience baiting on news, you know, but on the Instagram, I definitely do bait the audience. You know, I love doing it. So on Instagram, am I put, yeah, we're at Rush. Fuck you, punker. Rush rules. They open with Xanadu. Geddy Lee hasn't aged since 1986. Also, he hasn't updated his wardrobe since 1986, which is true.
That's
M,
funny.
this, I thought everyone would be like, F you suck. Rush is a punk. M, this was a massively popular post on our Instagram. Massively popular. So as much as the punkers say they hate Rush, they love Rush. But then here's something crazy. I wonder if this guy deleted it. Oh, maybe this guy deleted it. I
Oh
think he did.
no. Was it a good one?
It was really weird, Em. Like,
Oh no.
this guy like hates Rush, and I almost feel like the guy, oh, he deleted it. Oh, too bad. Damn it. I should have screenshotted it. Like, this was messed up, Em. This guy like said, you know, like Rush, he's like, Rush isn't punk. And then he says, like, this is crazy, Em. He says, I'm glad Neil Peart died. And then he said something even worse that I'm not even gonna say. It was like,
Oh
I'm like, oh my
no.
God, like, this guy is angry. Although someone else said, Rush gets the female free evening, which is not totally accurate, but pretty
Oof.
accurate, you know.
Oof.
Well, and there really is not that many women there at Rush. I mean, I'm just calling it like it is. The ladies do not, the ladies love LL, but they do not love Rush. So yeah, I guess the guy deleted his Instagram post, his thing. Oh well. So yeah. So M, that was my exciting Rush event. Well, anyways.
No, what were you gonna say?
So I was gonna post. So I did one more Rush. So they had this for the background video. Some of it was cool, and some of it was kind of like cheesy, like huge band like background video, which most bands really don't need. Although maybe they do, because the fact of the matter is, most people don't actually enjoy concerts. They think they do, but a lot of people actually get bored at 2 hour concerts. So a lot of big bands will have like kind of these dopey videos in the background. And so at one point, Rush had like a joint like flying through the universe and going on a train and stuff. So I put one more Rush post. They had a song about a joint that rode a train around the world and then flew away in a spaceship. We think you'll have to ask them live in Philly. And then some person said that was a passage to Bangkok. I didn't know it was a love song until last night. And like the guy didn't realize that I was being sarcastic. Like I knew it was a passage to Bangkok. The guy didn't get that I was being, but anyways. So anyways, yeah. So Rush was awesome. I highly recommend Rush, and I hope they come around again. M, you saw My Chemical Romance and someone even better opening.
Yeah, well, before I do that, I feel so bad. I missed your birthday. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's fine,
Happy
M.
belated birthday.
And I don't get that
Yeah.
excited about my birthday anymore,
I
Em,
know.
sadly.
But
So, but
it's still
I
nice.
appreciate. Although honestly, Em, check this out. Where was I, man? I was somewhere, and it was like a janitor or somebody. I was somewhere, and I wasn't even like bitching that much. But I'm like, it might even be my birthday. I'm like, yeah. Like they said like, oh, somehow. Where was I? Damn. It was somebody that needed, maybe it was the bank or something. I don't know. I can't remember. And they're like, oh, it was just your birthday. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, just be, well, they said, just grateful to have another day. And I'm like, damn, you totally shut me up. You
Oh
totally
my
shut me
God.
up. Like, damn, So, anyways, it was like one of those things like in movies from like the 90s and early 2000s, where like a janitor or a gardener or whatever like dispenses advice that is extremely wise, like Mr. Miyagi, I feel like made me feel like a real shithead. I gotta say, it really did.
No, yeah.
So anyway, Em, how was your big event? So what was your
Yes.
big adventure? Who do you see?
Yeah, okay. Big adventure was went to Windsor and
Canada? I mean,
Windsor.
UK? Windsor Castle?
Yes. Dined with the corpse of the Queen and then hopped on a plane and went to Detroit. This was my first time crossing the border in like, I don't know, over 10 years. Probably, I think the last time I crossed the border was like 14. So it had been a while. We went to Comerica Park to see My Chemical Romance. And Iggy Pop was opening, so I was very excited about the whole show. Comerica
Good on My
Park.
Chemical Romance for doing that, because honestly, My Chemical Romance fans might not be the central core audience for Iggy. That's cool they did that.
Yeah, like they were at the B stage, they were really like hyping him up and stuff and being like, wow, this is so sick. Like we got one of our like, big like influences and stuff to like open for us. Like thanks so much for him to like for being here. So, it was a really good like atmosphere. Yeah. So cross the border, everything goes well. The line to get into Comerica Park is really, really, really long. So we're like, ah. Okay, so we get in line. The line does not move. The line does not move, and
Brutal.
we can
I know.
hear Iggy Pop start.
Brutal. I've been in that situation once before.
Ugh.
Brutal. I
Sucks.
was going to chastise you, Em, but now I can't.
No, like it was the like they had like one gate open. It was ridiculous. So like
Isn't it hilarious that like sometimes like these giant stadiums where all they do is have giant events, they don't know how to do it? It's like, is this all you
Yeah.
do every day for like the past 30 years?
Well, like seriously, like I've been to like smaller venues with that fill the place in 5 minutes. And this is like, you have so many gates you can open. You have so much staff, all this kind of stuff. So we heard Iggy Pop kind of take to the stage when we were approaching the front, but still quite a ways back. So like couldn't really make out any of the songs or anything at that point. And then we got closer, so we got to like where like the security checks were. And at that point, like they started playing The Passenger, so like we can kind of hear a little bit of that. And by the time we're like actually in the venue, not at our seats, just in the venue, they're just finishing off Lust for Life and they're starting up I
Brutal.
Want to Be Your Dog. So I was like, ah, this place is really confusing. We were trying to find our seats, and like asking people who worked there and everything. So it took forever to find our seats, during which time they played Search and Destroy. And we got to our seats right before the last song.
Brutal.
So we got there, and so we were in front of the B stage, and like Iggy Pop and the band were on the main stage, and this is an outdoor venue, too. So started playing 1969, and I was like, hell yeah. And what I saw, how it sounded was good. So, it was, I'm glad we got part of it.
Brutal, brutal.
Also, props to Iggy Pop for committing to the bit and remaining shirtless the entire time, I'm assuming.
How
When
did
we
he
saw him,
sound?
he was
How did he
shirtless.
sound?
He sounded good. I wasn't mixed the best, but
Big
again, there
stage
was
is
just
tough,
kind of, yeah.
especially with like this. Honestly, like the Stooges or like Iggy or whatever. Very, very raw rock and roll. You know what I mean? As opposed to
Yeah.
like Joan Jett or Billy Idol. So it's very, honestly, it's kind of hard to translate that into the stadium, you know.
But like his voice sounded good. Like kind of if there was any solos where you could like hear a little bit more of like just the one instrument, like they sounded good. So yeah, like I think that's all it was just like too much, raw power, if you will. So that was good. And then it was kind of like, oh well, how is like My Chemical Romance gonna sound? Like just with how that was mixed. And they sounded great. Their mixing was super. there wasn't an issue. It was very clear. It was that part was actually one of like the My Chemical Romance show was one of the clearest mixed shows I've been to, which I was really surprised at because it's an open air venue and I wasn't sure how it was gonna be. When they played in Toronto, they played with the dome closed. So I thought it was going to be like a similar thing, but Comerica Park doesn't have a dome. So that was fun to experience. Yeah. So My Chemical Romance, and I'm not going to talk the listeners' ears off here. I could, but they're on the Long Live tour and they have so much like lore and world building and everything like that with this tour leg. So they have two versions of it. They have the Long Live tour and they have Moat. And Moat is like set in this like hospital prison type deal where they get reprogrammed and all this because they're like clones essentially in Long Live. So we saw the Long Live one in Toronto but hadn't seen like the other one, so it was the other one and it was so cool. There's like there's a giant eye, there's a lot of tie-ins to Blind, which is part of the Danger Days whole world, and everything. So there was a lot of really cool stuff. At the beginning, like they all walk out on stage and they're like given little pills to take and whatever. And usually, like hijinks ensue. So that happened. It's like, okay, cool, we're in for some like fun theatrics. And then like the eye comes down, and the eye has like a message and like Kaposhka that they're all reading, which is a language that they created along with like a language designer, came down, and Gerard slits Frank's throat, and everyone's like, oh my God, what's happening? And then Frank, of course, because of where they are, just regenerates and is like, hey, neat. So the Black Parade section is all of the Black Parade. So they play the album in order. Some of them have a little bit more, like they're all tied in with like story elements. There's a lot going on with Charlie, who plays the clown, but he's not the clown in this. He's like himself, kind of thing. Mama has the dagger outro, which is they bring out so Gerard does like a different adds a little bit to the song that's specific to the show, and then Sylvia comes out in this case to sing Liza Minnelli's parts. So like there was a lot going on. They had fireworks, they had pyro, and from where we were sitting, like we were very like far back from the main stage, and we could feel like the heat of the pyro, which was really, really cool. Gerard had one of like his best vocal performances. It was so good. And like for blood, he got on, like, they wheel Charlie out on a gurney, and he has a little, like, stuffed animal, and they kind of, like, tuck him in. And then Gerard comes out in a lab coat and gets on top of him and, like, stabs him and pulls out his entrails and all this kind of stuff. So it was cool. They were, like, high-fiving and having fun, which was nice. Because that's not always the case either. So then, for the transition to B stage, Clarice Jensen plays. So she's a cellist who is absolutely amazing. So she plays one of her original songs, and then she does a cover of Romance by My Chemical Romance, which is the opening track on I Brought You My Bullets, You Brought Me Your Love. And then the B stage changes every night. So we got Honey, This Mirror Isn't Big Enough for the Two of Us, Bury Me in Black, Na 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 Na. Jack the Ripper, which is a Morrissey cover, and this was the North American debut because they usually only play that in the UK or in Europe. Vampires Will Never Hurt You and Vampire Money. So we got double vampires because the moon was out, and that means double vampires. I'm Not Okay, Helena, Scarecrow, which was nuts, and they dedicated that to Lauren Valencia, who was their manager, who passed away a couple years ago. And then they closed the set with 0%. So 0% was a bonus track that was only available on certain versions of Danger Days. And then with the remaster, they made it more widely available. And this was the first time that 0% was a show closer, because they either closed the show with Helena or with Kids from Yesterday. So this was a big departure, and it was really cool. They sounded really good. It was cool just kind of like being near the B stage and like just being able to be part of it and like sing along with everybody and everything. We got some really great songs. And some songs that like I never thought I'd hear 0% live, so like that's really cool. Also, like I can't believe that I've seen My Chemical Romance 3 times, because it was like I'm never seeing them ever, and now it's like holy shit, I've seen them thrice. So yeah, like they were really good, and it was funny because like at one point during B stage, like Gerard Way is a little like noise box and stuff, so he just like pushed a button and was like, ha, that's a cool noise, isn't it? And then he just like pushed it again, and everyone's like cheering for like this little noise. That was pretty fun. So yeah, it was a really good show, and then we're able to get out pretty easily. People are making like friendship bracelets and stuff to like trade and whatever. So like I didn't have any to trade, but I got two, which was very nice. So I have one that is black and white and says Defiant to the End on it, and another one that has like kind of shimmery stars and stuff, which is cool. And Defiant to the End, of course, is a line from what song?
Defiant to the End.
What MCR song is that line from?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I can't name a single MCR song.
Welcome to the Black Parade.
Well, there you go. Fantastic.
So anyway, it was a lot of fun, and then got back into Canada, and that was great too. And if you're in Windsor, go to the Penalty Box and get the Chicken Delight. It is one of the best things I've ever eaten. It is like a grilled chicken wrap. The fries are insane. It is so good. The restaurant is hockey themed. Go eat there. It's so good.
What did you
Oh
think
my
of
God.
Detroit?
We're just in Detroit for the concert, so I didn't really like walk around or like look at anything. It was just kind of like in line, in venue, in car.
Did you see negative approach there?
No, I did not see a negative approach there, unfortunately,
Did you see
unless
it
they
for the
were.
did you see the white stripes hanging out?
I was looking for Jack White. I did not see. I also did not see Meg, but I did see Iggy Pop
Well,
on stage.
can't beat that. So very cool. I'm glad Em had fun. Too bad she didn't see all of Iggy Pop. At least she saw a little Iggy, and a little
Hey.
Iggy is better than no Iggy, that's for sure. So yeah. So listen, we'll hit some news. We're not gonna spend a whole lot of time on most of this stuff, but we'll get through it. So there's a new Hellcat band. It's called Family Business. It includes Jordan Katie of Rathboy, Preston of the Ordinary Boys, Anton of the Oh, and Anton of the English Beat. Also, Tim Armstrong and Jesse Michaels are creative collaborators, and they do some kind of vocal contributions on the track. There's one song out so far. It's called Floor Burner. Couple of things is M, what do you think of this track, Floor Burner? And second, Doom Regulator. I feel like this would have been an awesome Doom Regulator track, frankly. You know, I mean, this, well, I'll kick it off a little bit, then I'll throw it to M. This song is cool. This song sounds almost exactly like an Operation Ivy song. Like this song could have been an
Yeah.
Operation Ivy song. So is that exciting him, or is it a shame because it wasn't used for Doom Regulator, or what is going on?
That was my thought when I listened to it. It was like, yeah, this sounds very Operation Ivy-ish. The Doom Regulator like song that we got was really good, so I was kind of surprised in one way, but not in another, that this was a different band. I do think this would have been really good as a Doom Regulator track, and I hope we see more of them, but I fear we won't. It was good. It was a fun song. It was very upbeat, you know, very ska. But I don't know how much we're going to hear of the family business. You
Well, that is
know?
the thing with these Hellcat bands. They like remember there was that one band that was called the Orange Street Rockers, which was Cecile from
Oh,
Jamaica, and it was like an
yeah.
old track, and then we never heard from them ever again. You know,
And it was cool.
it was great. I mean, I would have loved the whole
Yeah.
album like that. I also would have loved it. There was that kind of that retro rock steady band with the young lady singing. Do you know who I'm talking about? Not the Skinks. They did put out an album on Hellcat, but they never put out a physical record.
They put out a full album.
They put out a digital full album, and I saw them at Punk Rock Bowling, and they I said, "Do you have a record for sale?" They're like, "Well, we have a digital record." I'm like, "Well, I kind of want to buy physical." And they had no physical media. I'm trying to remember the name of that band. They were pretty cool. Let me
Oh,
see
was
if I
it
can
the
find
Calamatics?
Calamatics. Yes,
Yeah, they're so good. I thought they had physical media.
I believe they do not. At least not the Hellcat
Oh.
record, which I thought was pretty good. Let's see, is that C-A-L Maddox? C-A-L-A Maddox, is that it?
Yeah, CALA Maddox. Yeah, because it was just self-titled. Oh yeah, no, I don't think they have it. It's just stream or save.
How do you spell Calamatics?
C Alamatix.
It's nothing
No,
popular on. I guess it's not on.
it's
I guess it's not.
all digital.
I'm
Yeah,
looking on Discogs, but it won't be there because there's no record.
I thought there was a physical thing. No,
All
it's
digital.
all digital. Okay.
So, anyways, so yeah, I mean, that's the thing with these Hellcat bands is they pop up, and then remember there was the Junkyard Gang, which was like Tim Armstrong and Tippah Irie and somebody else, and it's like, I don't know, man. These Hellcat bands pop up and then they go away. So I don't know. And would you rather have more of this or more Doom Regulator?
I think more Doom Regulator, but this was good.
This was cool, but I want more Doom. I want more Doom Regulator that sounds like this, you know.
Yeah.
So what do you think creative consult means? To me, that means they just helped them with songwriting. That's what that means to me. What do you think creative consult means?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like maybe they helped more on the production end of things. And maybe they helped with like, or I thought like production and art. Mostly.
It is cool that Jesse and Tim are hanging out and working on stuff together. So that's exciting, you know. So yeah, so there's
Yeah.
that. Here's something that's we I don't know if weird is the right word, but unexpected. So of course, as everyone knows, I mean, since quote reuniting in I don't know 2007 or 2010, let me look. Black Flag has gone through many members and many singers. Of course, there was Ron Reyes, then there was Mike V of the Rats, and now there's Max, and then, well, so there's Ron Reyes and a drummer and a bass player, and then Ron got fired, and I think they might have fired the drummer too, and then they brought in Mike V, and then they changed some of the another good bassist and drummer, so like the band kept changing. Then Greg Ginn fired everybody, and then brought in this new band with a bunch of young people, including singer Mac Zanelli, who I didn't know, but is Canadian, so M should you know try to claim that too, because M loves the Canadian pride. And so they're all pretty young, and honestly, as I've said, is I'm actually kind of interested in this. You know, I was not interested in Mike V and the Rats whatsoever. You know, singing with that version of the band. I was interested in the Ron Reyes band because it's Ron Reyes. But I was interested in the it's the first woman singing for Black Flag, and they're all like 19 or 20 or 21. That's pretty interesting. Black Flag reunited in 2011. No. 2013. So that they've been together for 13 years again. So, anyways, I bought a ticket for this. And guess what a ticket for this cost at a pretty small club? Probably 150 capacity club, maybe 100 capacity.
Ooh, I'm gonna say $85.
$50, which I thought, I'm like, nah, you know, even Flag doesn't get $50. Flag gets like 35, you know. I'm like, eh, $50. But I was interested in seeing this version of the band, and I missed him when they came around last time, so I got a $50 ticket. Well, Max isn't going to be singing for the band. She's got visa issues, so I guess she's in Canada right now. And there's going to be a new singer. The new singer just for this tour, I guess, is someone called London Downey. And I'm just not excited. You know, instead of it being three young people and Greg Ginn and a woman singing, now it's Greg Ginn and three dudes again, you know. And so I might not even go. You know what I mean? It's like I guess M, should we fault Greg Ginn for this? Or is the visa out of his control? And so he's making the best of it, or should he have canceled the tour? What do you and does Black Flag even mean anything anymore whatsoever?
I think that this is completely out of everyone's hands. Like, visa applications are ridiculous, and it's kind of, you don't know if you're going to get it or if you're not going to get it, and it's just really a roll of the dice. Like, there was last year, I knew there were quite a few Canadian bands, including Anti-Queens and Propagandhi, who had full US tours booked, who had announced full US tours, who had sold tickets for US tours. And then in the case of the Anti-Queens, they postponed the dates because they were told that their visas were going to be delayed longer than they were told. So they had to push their entire tour back. Propagandhi, I believe, canceled their US dates, refunded the tour or refunded the money, booked a Canadian tour, and then once they had their visas 100%, then they, I believe, went on a US tour. I could be wrong about the last one. Like
I don't think propaganda. No, propaganda did not do
they
USA tour.
didn't.
What was
Okay.
it? Did they make it clear
So,
that it was visas? I
yes, it
oh,
was
they did.
visas. Yep. From what I remember, I'll just do a really quick check here because like I know there were so many bands who were like doing stuff around that. Oh no. Yeah, well, so Propagandhi did not reschedule their US tour dates. They booked Canadian tour dates. And Punk News is not loading to show me what I need. It says circumstances beyond our control, but I think with how things were worded, that can kind of make an educated guess that it
You think
was
as
visa
visas could
issues.
be, yeah.
Yep. Well, because at that point in time, there were so many Canadian bands, especially who were being refused visas or whose visas were being dragged out for no apparent reason. Yeah, because there's just says due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to plan any USA dates in 2025. So I might be wrong, but my just kind of like baseless speculation is it was visa issues. So I think that's again completely out of anyone's hands. It doesn't matter when you apply. Because it seems like they weren't really coming through. With the important notice, this flyer poster thing looks AI generated.
It definitely does,
So
yeah.
that was like the first thing that really stuck out to me. With it, with the like, does Black Flag mean anything? I think the band means something. I think the songs mean something. I think the albums mean something. But I don't think that the live version of Black Flag carries that anymore.
Do you think Greg Ginn should have canceled this tour, or did he make the right call?
It, well, like, if Max is part of your band, you know, it's one of those things. But it seems like all of the members are just session players. You know, it doesn't seem like, oh, we have any, or Greg Ginn has any loyalty to one particular person. So I think it's we've already booked it. We've spent the money on like the van. We spent the money on this. People have like bought tickets to it. We're just gonna find a replacement and go. So I don't think he's in the wrong with not canceling the tour. I do think it's unfair to Max because it is something that's out of everybody's control. But again, who can say like they might like in a couple months it might be the Black Flag tour with Max singing. Do you know?
So you
Like
think Greg Ginn should proceed with the tour?
I think so because I think Max's visa is going to come through at some point, and I do think we're going to see a tour with Max. Unless there's more going on behind the scenes, but it seems pretty
No, I think it probably is a
straightforward.
visa issue. I don't think there's like some weird conspiracy or anything like that. But
What do you think? What's your take on the whole situation?
I think it would have been nice if they offered refunds, especially a 50-hour ticket, like, well. I think, I think it would have been, well, that is a good question because on one hand, it's like Black Flag has gone through so many singers and people in the current past, 5 years. Most people really are probably just going to see the Black Flag songs and or Greg Ginn. So the other people are almost arbitrary, from the, from the people going standpoint. Most people. I think it would have been more, maybe more interesting if you got someone with a name, someone that we know, like David. I mean, obviously David Yao probably wouldn't do it, but somebody like David Yao or somebody, as opposed to somebody we'd never heard of. Or it would have been nice if he explained who this person is. Like why is this person singing? It would have been nice instead of it seemed like it's just somebody he knows,
Oh, I see. Yeah.
He's like London. What's this guy's name? London.
London Downey?
Like who is that person? Like who is this? It would have been nice for him to say, "Oh, London Dally from London Dally from this from band XYZ or something," So yeah, so that's my take. But on the other hand, like I don't think anyone's broken hearted by this, not because they got anything against Max. It's just Black Flag has had so many lineup changes, and it's not Black Flag is really just a vehicle for Greg Ginn. So who not that big of a deal. Here's a big deal that really kind of didn't make that much news overall, which is a huge deal in the hip hop world. Dwayne Davis has been found guilty of for crimes related to the first degree murder of Tupac Shakur. Of course, the murder of Tupac has been a whodunit for over 30 years, or not quite, yeah, 30 years. And so finally, there's been a conviction now. Dwayne Davis, also known as Keith D, wasn't necessarily convicted of being the person that shot Tupac, but he was convicted of being in the car and handing the gun and procuring the gun and handing the gun and directing the killing of Tupac, of whomever actually did shoot Tupac. And the reason Tupac was killed, according to trial, was because Tupac and Suge Knight beat up Keith D's nephew earlier that night. So they went out looking for him and killed Tupac. And so this has been kind of a this. I mean, really, the Who Killed Tupac is one of the biggest whodunits in hip hop, along with Who Killed Jam Master Jay, which has also been solved. And the only one left is who killed, the only big one left is who killed Biggie, you know? And
Yeah.
actually, what's interesting is KRS-One from in 2006 or 2007 put out an album called, I think the album's called Hip Hop Lives. It's got a pretty cool song on it called Kill a Rapper. And the line is, so you want to get away with murder? Kill a rapper. And then he talks about how Tupac, Jam Master Jay, and Biggie's murders haven't been solved. Well, now two out of the three have been solved. And what's particularly interesting about this is Keith D was convicted on basically his own testimony, and that he did interviews where he talked about being in the car, and he even wrote a book about being in the car when Tupac was killed. And in part, that was because he was questioned before by police and admitted that he was in the car when Tupac was killed, but didn't say he knew who killed Tupac. So very much this guy kind of sealed his own fate. And so I mean, it seemed like everyone knew this guy was definitely part of it, and maybe was even more of a part of it than what he was convicted of. It is astounding to me that if there was like three or four people in the car, we know the names of some of them, that no one can point out who actually killed Tupac. You think someone would flip, but no one really did. But also, I was kind of shocked, and this is huge news, but it didn't make that big of an impact. Do you think it didn't make that big of an impact because people have kind of forgotten? And I'm not even a huge Tupac fanboy by any means. But do you think
Right.
people have kind of forgotten about Tupac and they just don't care anymore? Or do you think because it's so old that it's not that big of a news? Or do you think because we live in such a crazy world now, even the conviction of the killing of Tupac isn't that big of a deal? I mean, this is, I mean,
Oh.
and you weren't even born when Tupac was killed, but this is huge
No.
news in the hip hop world. Huge. It doesn't get bigger. And it didn't make that big of a bump in the, you know, in the national news cycle.
I think it's just because like the world is so crazy right now and there's just so much other stuff going on that this just like even though it is like really big news, like it did just kind of get like pushed aside because of everything that's happening, like the flooding in Nepal and like stuff like that. So I think it's just one of those things. I think that when or hopefully, I guess, if things do like calm down a little bit, people will be like, oh shit, like we missed out on this, and then they'll like look into it more. But yeah, like I was really surprised about this. Like when I was, well, I did a lot of research about the Tupac and Biggie murders when I was like in high school, maybe a little bit after, because it was something that like popped up on a show one day, like a Unsolved Mysteries kind of show, and it was like wow, and it just like really kind of sucked me in, and I was like, well, what's going on here? Like there's all of this like stuff happening and everything. So it's just wild to me that like the person who they have like found guilty was like, yeah, I was part of it in like books and interviews and like everywhere. Do you know what I mean? And
I
it's
was
like,
there. It's crazy.
yeah.
I was there, you know,
Like I saw this. I was like, what?
like isn't the thing like didn't see nothing, I have no idea what you're talking. Isn't that what you're supposed to say? You know, I was there. Like what?
And just like also calling his book Compton Street Legend, and then just like, I was in the car, Here's all the details about like the shooting and everything. And it's like, Did you not think people were gonna read the book? Like, did you think the statute of limitations was like done? Like, what kind of went into you saying that? And then I did see, yeah, something that his lawyers are saying that, oh yeah, he said all that stuff because he wanted like fame and recognition. He wasn't actually there.
You, but then they so the
So it's
prosecution,
like,
they found
what?
like hotel bills and stuff that proved he
Yeah.
was there, you know.
And then like his the defense, I guess, is just like, well, he said it because he wanted to say it. And I was like, what? Anyway, that was just something that I saw. Obviously I'll do fact checking on that, but yeah, I think there's gonna be a lot more like information and stuff come out and as the days go by.
So, M, do you think, A, do you think his conviction was correct? And that do you think Keefe D was at least in the car, gave a gun to the killer, and told the killer to kill? Did that happen?
I believe he was in the car, but I don't think that he gave the killer the gun or gave the order.
Why do you say that?
Because it feels just very strange to be like, I did it. I'm the one that did it, or I had a hand in it. You know, there's just something about it that seems very like grandiose, but that might also be what he was hoping for. Do you know what I mean? It might be like a
I actually might disagree with you because for whatever
okay.
reason, I've been listening to a lot of 90s Jamaican dance hall recently, which I used
Okay.
to hate and now I kind of love. And I'm not a fan of gangsterism for the sake of gangsterism, but I am when it comes to 90s Jamaican dance hall for whatever reason. And M is crazy. Guys like what's his name? Ninja Man. They're like the songs are like I did this crime. It was me. I did this crime, and then 10 years
What?
later, they get convicted of that crime. Like there's this one song, like Ninja Man's got a bunch of songs where he says, you know, he killed people or whatever, and then he got arrested for killing a guy that he said he killed on a track. Like, you know, so I think Keith D, I think the conviction is correct. Do you think Keith
Okay.
D killed him, killed Tupac himself?
No, I think it was somebody else in the car.
Who do you think it was?
I don't know, but I don't think it was him.
What if you were like Regis Philbin or something? Like Regis Philbin or something.
Somebody who had like a real vendetta.
I hate you, Tupac.
Wouldn't.
Regis, no. Who do you think killed Biggie? Oh, actually, one other thing is
Yes, yeah.
Keefe D said, wait, did Keefe D said Puff Daddy ordered the murder of Tupac. Do you think that is true?
Yes,
You do.
I think that he also like, because there's a lot of like weird stuff with him and Biggie's murder, so I don't know if like he did kill Biggie or, but I think he had a really big hand in killing Biggie because what sells better, you
No.
know?
Keefe D says Puff Daddy killed Tupac.
I think that maybe, yeah, like I think he would have a hand in it somehow.
There are some people that think, even though Biggie was Puff Daddy's guy, there are some people that think Puff Daddy did kill Biggie. Are you saying you think Puff Daddy killed Biggie too?
Yeah. Or he had a hand in it somehow because, like, I mean, you have this person on your roster. Who was thinking about leaving. You know, he was thinking about leaving Bad Boy Records from everything that I've seen. He was like looking at different places. I don't, you know, just kind of like stuff like that. And then shortly after, he is killed.
Interesting, interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Also, just one thing with that. If we look at how Biggie's posthumous releases were released and how they were treated. Diddy's on like every song, you know? So it's like I think there's also something there, and I think that's a lot. That's not mourning a friend. I think that's capitalizing on a someone's death.
Interesting. I had one other thing, but I forgot what it was. So there you go. Hip hop deep diving with M. Moore. They're very interesting takes. Em, I had no idea you're so into that. Em, are you a Biggie and a Tupac fan?
I got very into Biggie the year after high school. And Tupac, not really. Like, I've listened to a few songs of his, and I mean, like, he's okay.
Well, there you have it. M. Moore's take on hip hop. Well said. Let's see here. What's our next story? Oh, this is cool. Here's a positive story. So G Voucher and Penny Rimbaud and essentially crashed, but they've lost the G Voucher Foundation. The idea behind the G Voucher Foundation is to protect and preserve G Voucher's massive and massively important body of work, and also to protect Dial House, where Crass lives. And Penny Rimbaud found it, maybe with G Voucher, I can't forget. And it's kind of this hippy dippy artist space where you can, if you want to show up and hang out and there for weeks, you can, as long as you help out with like chopping firewood and that kind of stuff. And even Penny Rimbaud still chops firewood. And also you will get to see Penny Rimbaud gardening naked. And so there you go. I am very pleased to see G Voucher, and actually G Voucher is freaking awesome. Well, first of all, G Voucher's art is so amazing. And really, M,
Yes.
G Voucher doesn't get enough credit for her contributions to art and punk.
I agree.
G Voucher did all or almost all of the Crass artwork. She invented that very stark black and white collage work. M, how many thousands of punk bands have done stark black and white collage artwork? Almost all of them.
Oh, so many.
That's G Voucher. She really doesn't get enough credit now that I think about it. Like really, like before Crass, no one was doing art like that. And there was cool art before that for sure. If you look at the early LA punk scene, all that art's real cool. If you look at the early New York's punk scene is very cool too. But those records are almost shot like pop records. Like here's the Ramones standing, here's Blondie standing. Cool records, and like the
Yeah.
Stooges were shot like garage rock records. Those first couple album covers. But Crass comes along, game changer art wise, and so many bands still copy the Crass look. That's all G Voucher. She doesn't get enough credit, and she does not get enough credit.
G Voucher needs so much more credit.
She does. She does. Anyways, I think it's super cool. And good. I don't have any critique. Often I have a critique. I have no critique here. You can donate money to help with the foundation. I don't know about now. You probably still can. For a while, you could order really nice prints from Existential. Existential is just G Voucher and Penny Rimbaud. And you can order like prints of like the Crass first album, like as a giant poster print, and G Voucher signs it. And I ordered one. I didn't know it was G Voucher. And I get it in the mail, and I see like the customs signature is like G Voucher. So I'm like, oh, I have to keep this now. Like,
That's so
Crass
cool.
is the real deal, and they're still totally DIY, or not totally. They're still DIY, the kings of DIY. In that, like, when you order something from Crass, it's Crass shipping it to you, which is pretty insane. I mean, she's 84. That's pretty crazy, you know.
That's awesome, though. Like, it's like, you hope you're that, like, still going like that at 84, like, that's sick.
And did I tell you my recent G Voucher story?
You didn't tell me your recent G Voucher story.
Well, I'll give the listener. I'll give you more details, but I'm going to tease the listeners. Is
Yeah.
I had a recent interaction with G Voucher. Crass is the real deal. Let me put it this way. I've thrown 25 or 26 shows at this point, and my usual bitch is that opening bands are pains in the asses, and that the headline bands are actually super easy to work with. I reached out to G Voucher regarding something, and it, so we I'm doing it does not get higher in punk than Crass. It does not get higher. Not My Chemical Romance, not Rush, not Screeching Weasel, not I don't know, not Agent Orange, not Mike Park, not the Melvins. No one is higher than Crass, right?
Sure, yeah.
They are the real deal, and the crap. I mean, I've dealt with Steve, Penny, and G, and Eve Libertine. They are the real deal, just like Chumbawamba. They are the real friggin' deal. Crash rules, and that's all I'll say about that. So yeah, I
Hell
don't have any
yeah.
critique. And it would you go to Dial House and
Yes.
watch Penny Rainbow Garden naked?
I would love to go to Dial House. I think it would be a lot of fun. As to watching him garden naked, like I would feel the need to help, you know? So it'd be like, can I like weed the peas or something? Instead of just kind of sitting there and being like, ah, yep, there's Penny Rainbow naked.
So while Penny Rainbow is like working on his daffodils, you would weed the peas right next to him.
Why not?
I'm
Yes.
saying if you go to Dial House, you gotta see Penny Rainbow naked. Like that's part of it. Like you gotta see Penny Rainbow naked, you know,
Oh.
chopping wood and shit, you know.
No, 100%. You're seeing him naked regardless.
Right?
I just wouldn't like watch him.
Dude, oh I see you wouldn't like stand there
No.
like, ooh, Penny, get that dirt, you know. Listen, man, Penny truly is the last of the hippies, man. Like he is the man. Like Penny is the man, and G is the woman. They rule. They really do rule.
Yeah, they're
Let's
so
see
cool.
here. Let's kind of blast through these two. Well,
Sure.
actually, I want to rewind real quick. Yeah, great
Okay,
game with
what's
the
up?
AI flyer. A, lame as
Yes.
hell.
Lame as
B,
hell.
like you can make a. It's literally just text. You could type in Notepad and screenshot it. Like, why waste the AI with that?
Yeah, like that's using up the water of a small town. Was it worth it?
No, yet another reason why Craig Ginn is whack. Here's somebody that's not whack, but somebody that's daring and interesting and confusing. Andrew WK has released his first
Oh,
album in
yes.
6 years. It's called Temptation to Exist. And I was like, oh, wow, a new Andrew WK record. And the cover has him like leaning his head against a brick wall. And I played the first track, and it's like this instrumental cinematic jazz record. It sounds like something out like The Big Sleep or something, or The Thin Man or something like that. I'm like, oh, very interesting arty intro because people forget that Andrew WK can be very arty, you know? I'm like,
Yeah.
wow, kind of a cool intro. And then into the second song, there's another jazz track. Third song, another instrumental jazz track. So the whole thing, Em, is an instrumental jazz record. It is digital only. And then, after I did this news post, I'm like, oh man, I hope I didn't screw up. I hope this isn't like an AI squatter. Do you know about AI squatters?
I do. Yes,
And
very
so,
big issue.
like, I've had a couple clients. Like, so, like, I'm not, let's say my client is the Rolling Stones. They're not, obviously. Some AI squatter will just make some a random AI track that doesn't even sound like the Rolling Stones and upload it under the Rolling Stones name on under Spotify. In an attempt just to capitalize off people looking for Rolling Stones music, you know? So I put this story up. I'm like, and this album is so weird. I'm like, oh shit. Did I just put up an AI squatter track and say it was an Andrew WK album? Lucky for me, Em, it was a real Andrew WK album. And people were caught off guard, Em, but they shouldn't be caught off guard, Em. Why should people not be caught off guard by this jazz instrumental Andrew WK record? Because people are like, I can't believe Andrew WK is doing an instrumental jazz record. That's so shocking. Why should people not be shocked by that, Em?
I believe this is his background, right?
What do you mean is his background?
Like, what isn't he like a trained like jazz artist or something?
Actually, he is a trained piano player, you're right. But also, Em, he already did this once before, he did it in 2009. He's got an album called 55 Cadillac, which is an instrumental
Oh,
jazz piano record. He did it once before. Like, I can't, like,
cool.
I'm shocked, and I in the age of Wikipedia, well, we're past the age of Wikipedia, we're at the age of AI. So I guess I'm not shocked that people are forgetting easily researched things. Like I thought, like it, I thought everyone, because when 55 Cadillac came out, people were kind of shocked because it's like, wow, this is kind of a left of field thing. And then when he
Yeah.
did it again, people were like, I can't believe he did it. Like he already did it once before. Like he did this already. And then people also forget that same year he did a Japanese anime theme song covers album, you know. So he's done weird stuff before. So people
Oh,
just totally forgot.
yes.
Anyways, and one last thing, Em, is this track was produced by Steve Mike. And you may or may not know who is Steve Mike.
Steve Aoki?
No. So for a while, there was this weird conspiracy theory that Andrew WK wasn't actually Andrew WK, and that the person we thought was Andrew WK was actually someone named Steve Mike that like took over for Andrew WK or something like that, you see. And it was
What?
probably all some kind of big performance art thing and was not real. But there was like mass, there was this website that was like pages and pages and pages deep that seemed genuinely unhinged about this and might have come from Andrew WK himself. It's interestingly that Steve Mike produced this record, who most likely is just Andrew WK.
Oh, okay, interesting. I'll have to dive into the Andrew WK full lore.
It's pretty deep, Em. It's pretty deep. Anyways, I've seen Andrew WK live twice. Amazing live. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing live. And so I wasn't shocked by this album. I thought, as far as instrumental noir jazz records go, I thought it was pretty good. I'm like, oh, this is all right. I wasn't blown away by it, but I thought it was interesting and daring. And I like how Andrew WK is known for being the let's party guy, and then he does these totally far out things that nobody expects, even though we already did it once before.
He's done so much stuff. Oh my gosh.
Oh,
There's like,
also Em,
yeah.
Andrew WK, also the real deal, also cool as hell, because Em, when we did the first Punk News compilation tape, the
Oh,
My
yes.
Org tape, out of the blue, I somehow found Andrew WK's personal website email. I said, "Hey Andrew, can we put one of your tracks on it?" And he's like, "Sure, use this one." And that was it. And it was
Yeah.
he's the man. Andrew WK is, and I interviewed him once, and he was cool as hell as well. Actually, Em, the very first Punk News interview I ever did was Andrew WK, because it was someone else supposed to interview him, and they had an issue where they couldn't do an interview. So, like, it might have been Chris
Oh,
Moran or Brian Yancey said, "Who wants to
yeah.
interview Andrew WK?" Said, "I'll do it." And then I interviewed him, and it was cool as hell. Andrew WK, great guy. Well, I don't know him personally, but as far as I know, great guy.
That's really cool.
And he's married to Kat Denning, so good on him as well.
Hell yeah.
So there you go. And would you buy this record?
I listened to part of it. And I liked it. I thought it was really cool. It like I like visual stuff, and I found out recently that this is not an experience that everybody has, because I was talking to someone, not about this album, about something else, where I was like, oh, but they say this, and like, doesn't this make you picture, you know, this thing? And then the person's like, no, I never picture stuff when I'm like listening to music. And I'm like, oh, okay. Very cool. I do. Everything is like super visual. So like with this album, it was like I was listening to a movie soundtrack, which I really liked. I thought it was very cool. I want to listen to the full thing and like see kind of how it evolves or whatever. I just listened to the first two just while I was doing notes for the podcast, but yeah, I think it's sick.
Well, everyone, if they get the chance, they should go see Andrew W. Andrew WK live is awesome. Sometimes he does full band, but sometimes it's just him in a backing track, and he's got this hype man with him that looks like he's a drywaller. Like, it's just this dude with a
What?
skull cap, and he wears like sweatpants and like a wife beater, and he just like is this hype man, and it's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh my
Anyways,
God. I need to look up like videos of him live now.
he's awesome. He's awesome live. One last story, and then two. I guess we got to close it out with two sad stories, but what can you do?
What can
Anyway,
you
and
do?
no Bonnaroo in 2027. Everyone's like, who cares if there's no Bonnaroo in 2027? And there's a trend. That's who cares. You know, punk rock bowling, no punk rock bowling in 2026. This is hardcore, scaled back in 2026 or 2025, rather. Other festivals have been canceled. And if Bonnaroo, the massive festival, Bonnaroo can't do an installment in 2027, what hope is there for the rest of us, Em? What hope is there for Summer Soiree 10, Em, if even Bonnaroo can't do a show?
I have faith in Summer Soiree 10. This feels like something that could have been, well, the Bonnaroo thing specifically, not the larger trend. I'll talk about the larger trend in just a minute, but like the Bonnaroo thing, 100% is all weather related.
Last year, but not this year. Oh, or you think this year too, this upcoming year?
Well, with what they said, it was like with limited time to recuperate from back-to-back years of storms, including the heavy rainstorm on Sunday. The farm, particularly the main venue, needs a break to rest and recover. So it's taking a year off.
See,
That makes sense because, like, sorry.
well, I didn't mean to interrupt you. My bad. Go ahead.
That makes sense because, like, if you're farming or, like, and you're planting crops or you're grazing cattle or any other form of animal that grazes, you have to rotate. and you can't be working the same land over and over and over again because that depletes the nutritional or that depletes the growth and the nutrients in the soil and stuff. So this is like I think a similar thing where it's people have been on this land and there's been stuff set up on this land for so long during extreme weather events that if they don't take a break with it, then it won't be able to fully recover. But the other thing is they could find another venue. They could take this indoors. They could do an alternate version of it. So why aren't they doing an alternate version of it or doing one that will be protected from the elements as much as you can be? What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I don't totally buy that this is all weather related. I'm sure they
Okay.
took a hit or whatever. But, Bonnaroo is a money maker, not a money loser. So what they're saying is, we're not going to make money this entire year with this event, which to me is scary. And to me, it says that, the age of the festival, due to expenses, might be coming to an end. And honestly, like the age of the festival isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world, but I'm still sad about punk rock bowling. And I like music festivals, and so I am concerned that so many festivals are seemingly having trouble when a festival hypothetically should be the biggest money maker there is, music wise.
Right. Yeah, I
So
think,
like with punk
yeah.
rock bowling, I was kind of shocked because hypothetically that's how the Stern Brothers make their money for the year, is punk rock bowling. So for them to say we're taking a year off is essentially saying I'm not going to work this year. Which to me is crazy. I mean, not crazy, it's shocking,
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, like there's definitely a trend with larger festivals, but in the past few years, or like large for like DIY too, in the past few years, I've seen a lot more like grassroots festivals like pop up, or like ones that are specific to like a certain location, and things, and there's been so many more of those than like the Bonnaroos of the world or whatever. And then like, kind of larger DIY festivals like Pooza, they had to push back for 2027. They're happening in July instead of May this year because of an F1 scheduling thing. But they're doing their Pooza festival in Mexico in March. So it's like they're expanding in like different markets and stuff. So it's interesting to see kind of like what doesn't work, what pops up, and then what workarounds there are. Like throwing a festival is insane, like the amount of money and time that you have to throw into it. And then going to a festival is also a huge like monetary commitment. So it's like the ones that are thriving and the ones that are popping up more, like what is making them succeed? And it's like, is it because they're near affordable accommodation more than like other places? But then, like you and I talk about punk rock bowling and you're like, well, Vegas is really cool because it's super affordable, So it's like,
You can live like a king on $150 a night, and you can live like a king on $150. And actually, if you get there on Tuesday, it's like $40 or $50 a night.
ooh, loophole. But yeah, I hope festivals pull through. I hope that we see, something that keeps them affordable for everybody, but I'm not sure. I really think that what we're gonna see is more DIY, more grassroots festivals than like larger festivals moving forward.
Well, in a way, you're right in that I almost said another festival that I actively dislike. You know who I'm thinking of, Em.
Yeah, they shall not be named.
I don't know why I almost said that. Camp Punxsutawney, I've had my critiques of Camp Punxsutawney, but kudos to them, Em, is they seem to be
Yeah,
thriving and growing every year,
they
so
do.
maybe you're right, so yeah, so I don't know how anybody organizes a festival. As I've said, for Summer Soiree 9, I flew out two people and put one person up in a hotel, and even that was a lot of work and kind of nerve-wracking because things can go wrong in those scenarios, you know. I don't
Oh,
know how
for
anybody does it
sure.
with like hundreds of people, like, you know, so crazy. Anyways, I guess most festivals, they don't fly you out. They say, we'll pay you X number of dollars and then you'll be here. And then, you know, for like Punk Rock Bunga or Bonnaroo, they just run out of hotel and they've got like a, so I guess that makes it a little bit easier. But even so, man, it's a lot of work, Em. It's a lot of work. Anyways, we got
It
to wrap this
is.
up with two sad stories, quite sadly. Number one sad story, sadly, at the age of 80, Tim Curry, the famous actor and singer, has passed away. You know, he'd been struggling with health issues for a while. He had a real bad stroke about 10 years ago, and he's been, you know, kind of having trouble since then, although he's been out and about to a degree. He passed away, very sad. Tim Curry, amazing actor. A lot, he's been in a lot of awesome stuff. You know, of It, of course, Muppet Treasure Islands, Clue, Rocky Horror Picture, and Home Alone 2, and a whole bunch of, I didn't know he was in that cartoon, the traveling Thornberry.
The
Or,
Wild
wow,
Thornberrys.
yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that he was in that. He's the dad, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, 80 is not ancient. It's a pretty good run, but it's not ancient. So sad, but you know, Tim Curry, just amazing, amazing, and also he's got amazing interviews too. If you watch some of his interviews, Emma, I don't know if you have any reflections on
Nice.
Tim Curry or anything.
Tim Curry was, was very surprising, in a way that he had passed. And today they or yesterday or today they announced like his cause of death, and it was from coronary artery disease. So you know that really sucks. He, like, I mean, there were so many of his like films and like voice work that really, you know, had an impact on me growing up and as I got older and everything too. So one thing that I didn't know until his passing was like that he had such an extensive music career too. He had like a couple albums, he had music videos, he has one of the oddest Halloween songs I've ever heard. You know, and it was just like everything that I've seen him in, or every interview that I've watched, it was just like, again, this was somebody who seemed to really love life, love creating, love acting, love music, love art, and really put that back into the world and had such a sense of humor and a great outlook on things, especially like after the stroke and coming back from it. Like he taught himself how to talk again and you know like different things and like not stopping because of that, like just adapting and moving forward kind of regardless. So yeah, there will never be another.
True that. And speaking of never be another, quite sadly, at age 80, Dolly Parton has passed away. She had a brief battle with cancer. She'd been sick for a little while. I think she canceled some dates. Dolly Parton, you know, Dolly Parton is getting a ton of love, what she should.
Yeah.
Another, you know, amazing performer, amazing songwriter. I actually, about maybe even 2 months ago, I saw the Dolly Parton 9 to 5 play. She's not physically there, but they have her like on the video and stuff, like introducing it and doing voiceover. And it was, honestly, it was awesome. It was great. Of course, you know, Dolly Parton, great in the movie 9 to 5. Great, amazing singer. Jolene, Coat of Many Colors, I Will Always Love You, 9 to 5, Here You Come Again. Amazing, amazing performer. And honestly, like, also, like, but not like truly an amazing person, not only an amazing performer, Em. But behind the scenes, a legit awesome person. Did you know, Em, that she has a program that I think is now was fully funded and is self-funded now, where any kid like 0 to 5 can get a free book a month from Dolly Parton? Did you know that?
Yeah, Imagination Library.
And also, did you know that I actually did know this? She donated like $1 million or even more to research that developed one of the COVID vaccines. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's
Like,
so cool. Like
Dolly's like
she
one of the main reasons COVID got under control, or however you want to phrase it. Like, truly an amazing person, and really like just awesome all the way around, awesome.
Truly, yeah, like it's so nice when, like you just see all of these like really, really, really great, very meaningful, very impactful things that someone, did during their lifetime, and they did it because it was like, this is the right thing to do. This is something that I want to be doing. And I believe in like literacy, and I believe in health, and all this. And there is also something where she was like, yeah, if you have experimental drugs for cancer, you can test them on me, kind of thing, and we'll see if it does anything. So there's a lot of stuff. She seemed like a really, really genuine, really, really, really nice person too. And again, just like love of everything.
Yeah, man. R.I.P. Dolly. I mean, just to.
Yeah.
Oh, also, honestly, like, I really haven't listened to that many Dolly Parton records. I've listened to singles, not records. I mean, I listen to some of her like her records are like really good. Like definitely worth re jumping into. Her records have some really good songs on them. So, R.I.P. Dolly for sure. So, anyway, Em, any other closing words on Dolly or anything else?
Yeah, everyone should go watch 9 to 5 or Best Little Whorehouse in Texas and Rocky Horror and Clue and Muppet's Treasure Island, and like listen to Dolly Parton's discography and listen to Tim Curry's awesome weird music.
Well said. And we will see you next week with a special guest, Em. Who could that special guest be? Who?
I'm excited.